The Passholder Lounge is open once again, and I am thrilled to welcome you in. Hello again, it's Justin Monorail. Welcome back to the Passholder Lounge podcast. It's episode 5. We did it. We made it. And I am very excited for you to hear today's show because I'm bringing in a couple of my friends and a couple of my favorite Disney podcasters in the entire universe. It is Frank and Jen of Theme Park Thursday with Dillo's Diz. Classics. Every show they do is a classic. Every show we do together is a classic. Every time the podcast minds of Frank, Jen, and Justin Monorail get together, magic is made. And that's what happened once again today. I want to get right to that. But before I do, a couple of things. Number one, some of you have already started reviewing the show on iTunes. Thank you so much. I don't know if you realize how much that means, how much it helps a new podcast. First of all, just me personally, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the fact that you set aside a moment to go and give me your feedback and give me that review. I also appreciate the fact that you're giving me 5 stars. It means a lot. It really does. I read them all, and it really touches me. I would encourage others to go ahead and do that as well, because the more you do that, the more visibility the show is going to get, and it really will help me out. So thank you so much. Keep it going. I'm giving you shout outs on the social media. I'll give you some shout outs here too. Let me gather up some more and we'll do a whole round of that coming up. But one little asterisk to this conversation. I want to be very clear, because I think if you are going to review the show, it's only fair that you review the show the right way. Keep in mind, and I'll say it in this episode, I keep saying it, this is not a Disney podcast. Do I talk about Disney? Sure. Yes, I do. And I will continue to do that, but this is not a Disney podcast. That's number one. Number two, this show, from episode to episode, is going to change. Because every single episode, I'm going to bring on a different contributor. And maybe not every episode is going to be your absolute favorite thing. That's okay. Wait till the next one, because it might be even better. So don't maybe give the whole show a bad review if maybe one episode, especially if it was because of the particular topic or the co-host or whatever it may be on that episode. Maybe don't give the whole show a bad review just because of that. Just come back next week because it'll be different. So those are the things I'll ask you. But you know what? At the end of the day, I know you're going to do what you want. I'm just asking. You looking at me? I don't know. I don't have anything else to say. Let's get to the show. Frank and Jen, Theme Park Thursday with Dillo's Diz. Let's do it! This is going to be a bit of an experiment.
Okay.
The way that I'm doing this show. And just so you all know, you are my first recording.
No pressure.
No pressure. But I wouldn't want to start it any other way. As you can see, if you saw the title, you're going to be episode 5. Because I'm going to bank a bunch of these. And what I'm hoping is that I get like ahead by 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
So that means most likely I'll never be in touch with like what the news is. So I'm not talking news.
We can talk news.
I think if we talk about like big things that it'll be okay. Cause some of that stuff you can talk about for weeks.
Yeah.
But if it's like breaking news, oh, guess what? Bob Chapek fell down and busted his ankle and who cares?
Right.
I'm going to be mostly just focusing on just specific topics. And the concept here is that I really want it to be a chat. We're brought together because of our love of theme parks, whatever mm-hmm. theme parks they may be, but who knows where the conversation will go. Sure, we're going to have a topic. We'll talk about that thing, but this is really going to be more free form, which is crazy for me. I know.
Yes.
I'm like the biggest planner of all time, me with my outlines. And
you got some bullets written down? You got
some
bullet points?
I actually have a page and a half of notes on my screen right here. But it's going to be tangenty. It's just going to be free form. And the goal is to not record for 2.5 hours. We're going to try to keep this thing. We're going to keep it tight.
Right.
So This is actually part of the show. I'm keeping this in. I'm gonna start with like a little separate intro, similar, inspired by our friend Steffers.
Yes.
She does a little intro before her show. I'm gonna do that too. Mm-hmm. But once I get my people on, we're just gonna roll with it and go. So that's all what's right. happening.
Yeah. Sounds good, man.
Yeah.
So but it's so good to have you both on. I'm really excited to actually be able to talk to you again. Jen and I were chatting before you joined, Frank, that it's been a while since we talked in this format, but it just feels so familiar.
I know, right? Isn't this what we were doing multiple times a week, like last week? No? Right. can we just start with, this is your show, so I'm going to start with the fact that we have successfully had the meeting of you and Mr. Snidillo.
Oh my God. I can't tell you. I really thought that it may never happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now that it has, it lived up to every expectation that I ever had. My heart is so full. And I just feel like now where do I go? Like, have I peaked? Have I peaked?
Mm.
Is it all downhill from here? I don't know.
It was legitimate years in the making. So
yes.
I mean, definitely. And so many near misses, and to the point where I actually thought either A, Jay is pranking me. Like, this is absolutely a prank and it's a setup. It's going to be one of those things where he's like, yeah, I'm going to be there at this time. And then someone's going, oh, sorry. I missed the train or something. But it happened and I was so happy. And to meet the little ones too was great.
Yes.
That was fantastic as well. Cause always hearing the stories and seeing the pictures and stuff. But you both have wonderful families, both of you.
Thank you.
So happy I have met them all.
It's true. You have well, I guess Mom and Papadillo are like, that's for everybody.
That's true. That's the pinnacle, I think. That's where the peak is.
That's a real bingo.
You're right.
Yeah.
That's a good point. And I don't know. I feel like I haven't necessarily earned that yet. That's a big reward at some point for me that I haven't done.
They haven't met anybody, right?
No.
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 Yeah.
No.
I'm just going to say this right now.
Near misses.
If Adam is the first to meet them, I will riot. I will riot.
I mean, the fact that Long Island Frank hasn't tracked him down by now, I'm shocked. I mean, I figured he would have... The little bit of stalking. He may have been able to pull
off. True. Yeah, he's in the area. He's in the proximity. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
So for those who maybe are joining the show, and I don't know how this would have happened, but maybe you didn't listen to the Monday Morning Monorail or AKA Morning Monorail. Maybe you haven't heard Dillo's Diz and you just happened upon this show for the first time. We have a history, I will say, the three of us.
Yes.
Jen and Frank do a wonderful podcast, the number one Disney podcast hosted by siblings from the tri-state area.
Yeah.
Released on a Thursday.
That's right.
In the entire world.
I mean,
it's true.
No one's coming after us for that.
No, you've got the title. You need a trophy. You need a plaque. I'm going to send you a plaque. That's going to be a gift at some point. But we joined forces several years ago because under the mutual love of Disney, my family and I started a podcast, the Monday Morning Monorail podcast. I've already had a couple cut waters, by the way. I think we connected through social media. We, ended up sort of like doing a little bit of a call and response between podcasts. And eventually we just made it happen where we're like, we're going to have to do we're going to have to join forces and do a crossover. And we did it. And the rest is history. But ever since then, of course, we have expanded into actually being like real friends.
Yeah.
And
it with hesitation, Justin.
No. I just wanted. That was more
confident in that.
Real friends, not just fake podcasty character friends, like real friends.
Yes.
But the thing that was missing was this connection with Jen and Jen's husband and myself, who we have this mutual love of so many nerdy things that I was just like, I don't know how we haven't been best friends for our whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
And now the connection has finally been made. So that's the backstory you might have been missing. And it's happened now. So, but I bring up that and it helps me to segue into what I am calling our topic for the day, and we'll talk about it. Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. Which is I've posted it as hashtag always MGM.
Yes, as it should be.
I actually was tempted to post it as hashtag always MGM with a question mark. Because several reasons. One is, of course, it's not called that by the Disney marketing media giant anymore. But we know the people who are purists who've loved it forever have had trouble letting go of the name, Jen and Frank included. but not just that. There's been so much that's changed in that park over the years. And this is kind of where I wanted to go with this conversation, because I think it is well known across the Disney lovers community that Jen and Frank, their number one park in their hearts is hashtag always MGM.
I think Jen would fight. Jen would fight for Epcot a little bit, I think, just based okay. on the work life.
It's up there, though, but yeah. It's up there. Yeah.
At least it's in contention. Yeah. Frank, this is true for you, right?
Yeah, that is my home park, yes. Yeah.
It's your home park. It's your number one. Yeah. Always will be. Can't unseat it. But Jen, 100%. For you, I forget the operating participant backstory.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. The Epcot connection. And of course, I mean, you know, that's where the J connection comes from too,
that's right?
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, I think that a lot of the Dillo's mythology is sort of based in their nostalgia.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so I wanted to talk a little bit just about, I want to dig into this. This is our Oprah moment. Let's really get into, you know, the park wasn't original, right? It opens in 89. Mm-hmm. We had Magic Kingdom and Epcot first. Yep. Was that connection? Whoa. that wasn't a misconnection. That was slim.
Frog and throat.
That's right. Was that connection for you all instant when you first experienced MGM? And I don't know if you got to go in 1989. I assume you probably did in that mm-hmm. summer, at least.
Yeah, I think back then we were. We did maybe that was our last like December/January trip. So I think we went in December of 89 okay. and then we started doing summers in the summer of 90. And okay. so I think in part of the enjoyment of MGM instantly for the family, Jen was 7 at the time. So I don't think I can really speak. I don't know if she can, I can't speak for it. I don't know if she can, but I think the enjoyment of that park and I guess the subsequent opening of Universal Studios too prompted the summer discussion. And it wasn't so much of a discussion in the summer of 90 as it was, oh, we're going to Colonial Williamsburg this summer. And Jen and I were like, what? And then it became a surprise trip. And then after mm-hmm. that, the summers were in play. But I know for me, you know, what do you, at that point, there's like three things I was doing in my life, like thinking about Disney, playing baseball and going to the movies. Mm. And I think that it would have been very easy for the Disney thing to go away as a teenager. And this combination of Disney and the movies somehow grabbed me in the adolescence and kept that going to this day. So I will pass it over to Jen for her thoughts.
I started laughing when you talked about the Williamsburg surprise because my recollection of it, and it's, you know, spotty because Frank and I have a 7.5 each year gap between us. I'm much, much younger. And so, you know, it's a little spotty, my memories. But what I do remember is that we were probably really annoying about the whole thing. Like, we were not happy. We were being brats about it. Like, we were kind of putting up a fight.
Yeah, the summer before, we had gone to this resort that still exists in the Catskill Mountains called Villa Roma.
Yeah.
And it didn't go well.
Yeah. So we were like, why are we going to all these new places? And then to surprise us, and I'm sure Mom and Papadillo were like, this is so annoying. Guess what? You're going to Disney. You happy now? Like, I'm sure it kind of was presented that way. And I laugh now because we have a term we use, which is dilloing, you know, where we dillo things. We don't set our expectations high. We don't do mm-hmm. these things. And I'm like, maybe that was the start of dilloing because we were just mad and digging our heels in. But for the opening of hashtag always MGM, I feel like a lot of our childhood the early years and the early trips to Disney, we would stay at the Polynesian. So it was very like monorail based. And I feel like with the opening of hashtag always MGM came the opening of the Beach Club as well. And this started like the next chapter of Disney for us. So the two kind of go hand in hand, where I do have a lot of memories of the early days of hashtag always MGM. One, because the all new Mickey Mouse Club was being filmed there and we were big fans of that. I feel like we stayed in that park at night a lot and we would watch Streetmosphere. And so there's more surrounding it, maybe because it was in the summer. So that became more of our relaxing vacation, where we started doing breaks in the day and going in the pool. And it became more of this whole experience instead of, oh, we're going to the theme parks for a few days, we're going to Magic Kingdom and that's it. So I do, you know, I do have a lot of nostalgia for it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And I totally understand that connection. I mean, I was wondering for a moment, like when you were talking about this trip to Colonial Williamsburg, do you think that was ever a real thing, or was it always a misdirect planned by the parents?
I mean, that's a good question. Yeah. I mean, I would suspect they tried to float it. And our instant response probably prompted the pivot. I'm sure they didn't. They weren't set on it, but I think. And then they probably then decided in how hard we responded negatively to that, to be like, all right, we're going to stick with this, but we'll get them in the end.
And I think to this day, 30 something years later, no Dillo has set foot in Colonial Williamsburg. I don't think any of us have ever been. So that was our one shot. And there it goes.
Question. Are we talking Williamsburg, Virginia?
Yes.
Okay. So you could go. There is a Busch Gardens there.
Sure. Right.
I mean.
And I'll one up it and say, I haven't stepped foot in a Busch Gardens. That's how much I wasn't going to. I didn't even go to the one in Tampa.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
I've never been to a Busch Gardens either.
Yeah, I think that's something I'll have to find somebody who, you know, at some point is maybe a Busch Gardens pass holder. I guess technically I am now, because I've got that SeaWorld, like their top tier pass. Mm-hmm. So I could go anytime I want. Have I been? No. I went a long time ago, like way back in, it had to have been like a 90s trip when I went to Busch Gardens, but in Tampa. But I haven't been in a very long time.
But you've done SeaWorld?
I have done SeaWorld since I got my pass. Yeah, I've gone a few times.
I feel like it's one of those things. You know, I still haven't stepped foot on the Statue of Liberty. I haven't been on Ellis Island. I haven't and I feel like when you're an Orlando inhabitant, you know, I went to SeaWorld when I was a kid. Jen went when she was a kid, but I didn't go when I lived there. And so if I didn't make it to SeaWorld, I wasn't making it.
I think SeaWorld, that's a good point. I think SeaWorld's done a pretty good job over the last, like, let's say 10, 15 years, because they've had to rebrand themselves after the old Blackfish fiasco. They've sort of like started distancing themselves from more like, you know, they're trying to position themselves as more of like a coaster park. With some sea life that you can also see as well. And the other thing that they've leaned into is there's a lot of bars around SeaWorld. And so they're like kind of pushing that aspect of it. They're doing more of the food festivals, taking a cue from Disney, things like that. And doing like a concert series. Like I think Queensryche is playing this weekend. They're doing all sorts of things like that. So they're trying really hard to kind of change that whole image and experience, which for me, when I went, the two times that I've gone, I went during the Seven Seas Seafood Festival or the Seven Seas Food Festival, and just basically hopped around as if I was at Epcot, getting food, getting drinks, just kind of hanging out, taking in the vibe. And then I went another time and it was more focused on, I got to get in some of these roller coasters, and I did some of that. So it's really been interesting kind of relearning that park, because my only other experience at SeaWorld was probably in 92. 93, like early 90s, when it was all about Shamu in those days.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Even I think the strollers were like shaped like Shamu back then.
I think I have a picture of myself in one of them.
So, But anyway, I'll eventually make it over to Busch Gardens. I imagine that I'll probably get over there for maybe in the Halloween season. Maybe this year I expand out and go to their spooky event, possibly. We'll have to see how that goes.
I didn't know if that's what prompted it, was if you went to the spooky stuff last year.
I did. I did do that, but I wasn't counting that as a trip to SeaWorld, because I didn't really – well, we did ride Mako that night, but mostly we were just doing the houses and
gotcha.
And getting visited by the Jell-O shots ladies. It was a good night. So, all right, but back to hashtag always MGM. So it's interesting to think about how that park has changed and developed. And it's, speaking of rebranding itself or repositioning itself, when it opened in 1989, the part of the appeal, and of course this was sort of competing with Universal Studios that was going to be opening as well, was that it was going to be a working backlot. There was actually going to be production there. Mm-hmm. Some of the animation, a satellite animation studio was going to be there. They were going to be filming TV shows. I know you talked about the all-new Mickey Mouse Club. Mm-hmm. What was the Hulk Hogan show? Thunder in Paradise?
Thunder in Paradise, sure. Yeah.
They had some WCW live events going on there. All sorts of – there was actual production going on there. Mm-hmm. But I believe when the park opened, that in terms of attractions – it was really the backlot tour. And I mean, was there another ride, or was that the only ride when it opened?
Well, the Great Movie Ride was there from the from get-go.
Day one?
Day one, yes.
Okay. Yeah, but it was, I mean, I can remember early in Hollywood Studios life, in MGM's life, that people would talk about it the way they do Animal Kingdom now. It was a half-day park. Is it really worth the ticket? If you were park hopping, sure, you could go there. You'd leave at lunchtime and then go to Epcot or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily remember my experience in the park when it was still so young. But Frank, because you're the oldest of the group.
Yeah.
Can you tell, when you went, what was it that drew you in right away? The connection to Hollywood, the all of that. But when you experienced the park, what was it that grabbed you?
I think it called to nostalgia in general. So by December, the Indiana Jones Epic Stunt Spectacular had also opened. So that was a hook. So you were getting different aspects. The backstage studio tour was definitely, it was lengthy too. So in terms of it being a half day park, it took you a while to do the tram portion and then the walkthrough. The walkthrough was very long. I think I remember that at the end of the first one that we ever did, that I think they plugged, you saw a trailer for Father of the Bride, I feel like was the first the first thing you ever saw at the end of that. So it was, that part was time consuming. So they knew how to kind of pace you and not make it feel like, well, it's over. I did everything already. It's 11 o'clock. So that first trip, there was definitely that part of it. The live entertainment at the front with Citizens of Hollywood, which they had different names back then. Stunt Spectacular, Movie Ride, Backstage Tour. I felt like that was enough. But also the way we did our trips back then was Epcot at night almost always, because Magic Kingdom would close at 6 o'clock in December. So we were always kind of pushing. Maybe we did the 3 o'clock parade in the Magic Kingdom. Maybe.
What time is that?
It was at 3 o'clock, I believe.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And
checking my watch.
So if we did that, then we would be at Epcot until 9 o'clock. So similarly, the studios, if we didn't feel like, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, we're out, that just felt like a normal thing for us then to go over to Epcot. And then subsequently, I was revisiting my nostalgia, right? So you figure 89 was Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade had just come out. So I was on a very big Indiana Jones kick at that point. But then Star Tours came in and it was like revisiting Star Wars all over again. I thought I had completely let it go and it came rushing back. And then the year after that was Muppets. And so they were planting the seeds in my brain for the first three years of that park.
Phones tapped or something. Mm-hmm. They were like, okay, what's Frank talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, they were hitting all the notes. And that's something I didn't mention, but Streetmosphere is maybe, aside from, it's like the last attraction that's still standing from original MGM.
Yeah. Right, yeah. I mean,
maybe they haven't come back yet.
Well, yet, so.
I'm sure that they will. I've seen the characters walking around and doing some interactions. It's not fully back, I agree, but I think that eventually they'll get there.
They'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they're still, because that is like so much a part of the character of that park.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You
know? Well, and that's, and they can, I mean, maybe we're jumping ahead, but I feel like with all the changes that have come over time, the first half of that park, the front half of that park is still a time capsule for me. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, we can get into all the changes and stuff, but walking into that park, and again, it's my home park, so I'm very, very biased that it is always a rush of feelings walking into that park.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think what many things annoy me about change, because that's how we are. But one of the things that does annoy me about the change of the name to Hollywood Studios is that they took away some of the Hollywood parts of it. And I think that gets me. And so if you do put Streetmosphere out, right when you walk in, that kind of bring you into this experience in this world, you kind of buy into then, oh, this is Hollywood Studios. Oh, it's all about movies and things like that. And I feel like they kind of veered away from that, and with it being the name, bring some of that back.
Yeah.
You know, to try to get you back into, like, immerse you into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree. I think, you know, that front part of the park, it has the effect of, for me, just walking in and almost getting the first glimpse of the castle, which is kind of interesting because when you think of park icons, hashtag always MGM Hollywood Studios has had its share of its own icons that have sort of changed, again, changing over the years.
Yeah.
I've always sort of held on to the fact that to me, the Earful Tower was always like the icon. And then, but also I get that like the Chinese studio was, or Chinese theater was set up to kind of be that focal point as well. Mm-hmm. But as a kid, it's the Mickey ears. I wanted to see the Earful Tower.
Right.
But like, it's interesting to me that they made that choice, you know, to put in the sorcerer's hat that kind of blocked the Chinese theater. And, you know, it's funny, right? Because you talk to people who, when they started experiencing the park, it was already there. And they're like, for them, now that it's gone, it's that's hard. That's a hard change for them.
Yes.
But then not going back to sort of like embracing that Chinese theater as this is the symbol of the park, because now it's the Tower of Terror. But if that's true, why are we tearing down Tower of Terror signs? What's happening? What is happening?
That's right. Oh, that billboard.
Yeah.
One day Bob Chapek woke up and said, tear that billboard down.
Exactly. You know why? Because that moving elevator, like they always had to repair that thing. So they're like, I'm not spending money repairing that anymore. Tear that whole sign down.
Exactly.
You don't see them ripping the Yeti out of Everest.
Well, right. Could they just put a strobe light on the, but that might have been distracting for drivers. You got a strobe light going on. Yeah, but
the thing, you know, and the thing with the sorcerer's hat that gets me is, you know, and I get that there's a whole bunch of business, whatever legal stuff they were going through for part of that. But to me, it's a symbol of I was coming right out of, and maybe I was 2 years out of the employment as a cast member at the studios at that point. So to me, it was like, and now we're just going to, now you're really mentally blocked about it. It just felt like it was a personal block of how studios was to me. So, and in the end, when they decided to remove it, obviously I was very gleeful about it, but I also was like, there's some place that this can go. I think it's still a suitable icon. So I don't understand why they didn't try to repurpose it, because I know people do love it, and I'm not going to like be like, you're wrong and I'm right. No, we can all be winners. And let's find something that's good for this sorcerer's hat. I that's the part I don't get, is like, why did you have it there for so long? Mm-hmm. I mean, besides the reasons they had, but, and then to just like dump it, like, it's over now.
Yeah.
Well, then you, why? Why did you do that?
Yeah.
Ah, the sorcerer's hat. It did feel like a personal attack. It's true.
But I do get that for people, because it was there for so long, that people do have experience of, oh, this was my first trip and this is such a big part of it for me. And to remove it feel so weird. Whereas for me, it was not, and it never should have been there. And I was so happy it was gone. But I can see both sides, sure. Of course. Yes.
I think it was Justin, cool looking.
Yeah. Did you? I was going to say, yeah, I think it was cool looking too. I was going to ask you, Justin, because you're there locally and you know, a fan of Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. Do you think the pandemic really stunted that ride as becoming the centerpiece?
That's an interesting question. Since it came out, right?
Because 2 weeks, 3 weeks before the world shut down.
I think that's very possible because honestly, you know what ended up happening too is when people first experienced that ride post pandemic, the pre-show wasn't operating. And I think personally, the pre-show, like probably if I let's say I love that ride, like on a scale for 1 to 10, I do it without the pre-show. And I think it's like a 6.5. Mm-hmm. I think that pre-show takes it to an 8, 8.5, like, because it does such a good job of what Disney does, which is sucking you into the story immediately. It ties everything together. When you're walking out and you see that screen that you're coming out of and it says the end on it, like it's part of the whole story.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So I sort of wonder if that has, for some people at least, changed the experience to be like, well, I go ride this, I get on a train and it's fun, but like I don't necessarily get the whole story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, that's a good point. A good point with the pre-show, because I think maybe I've done the pre-show once in every, and I've been on it enough in the last year and a half, but I think I've only done the pre-show once because something is always happening with it.
Yeah,
so besides the pandemic stuff, you know.
Right. They didn't want to, for a while at least, they didn't want to pile us in like sardines to see, you know. But it's such a good effect, you know, for people who haven't done it. And if you do get to see it for the first time, I know it was spoiled for me before I experienced it. But even knowing what was going to happen, seeing it in person the first time really did kind of blow my mind. Jen, have you seen the pre-show?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. I feel like I've seen it a few. And I saw it last year, too.
So I think you saw it, Jen, and then during Delta, the Delta portion of our lives. Then I did not see it in August. I think I've done it. Maybe I haven't done it at all. Now that I'm thinking about it, maybe you and I did it in January, Jen. Maybe.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. That makes sense. Cause I feel like I've done it a few times and I did it on this last trip. So
and then this portion of the global pandemic.
That's right. I know. Oh my God.
I'll mesh it together.
We thought, right. How naive were we early on in this pandemic? We were like, there's going to be a start and finish to this thing. No. It's going to be part A, part B, part subsection 3.5. Like it's just going to keep going. Hey, speaking of pre-shows, here's our a big tangent that I want to go on, because Jen, I know you got to do Cosmic Rewind.
I did.
I just want to say, I've only done it once, but my experience with the pre-show on Cosmic Rewind, I honestly think this may hurt me a little bit to say this. It might be just thinking of how it ties to the ride, the effects that are used, like how well it works. I think it might be the best pre-show on property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's a really good pre-show. And I went on with my friend Steve. He came in to literally just ride it with us and then left. And so he has been on it multiple times at this point and was just so excited over every aspect of this ride. He's obsessed with it. And the pre-show to him, though, like puts it all over the edge. It blows my mind. It's the most amazing thing I've seen on, like, nothing tops this for me. And so for me, because since before Christmas, what month is it? I've been saying that I'm going to sit and watch the MCU all the way through and I'll vlog about it, and I haven't started because Hallmark season was in December, and at some point after that I was doing it.
You don't have time for anything else.
But there's another viewing of Schitt's Creek to be had.
That's right.
But I have seen Guardians, and so I can recognize what a good pre-show it is. Now the rest of the ride, you know, it messed me up a little bit, so things are a little skewed in my head. But I do know that I can recognize how good it was, and just what you're hearing among the people as you're waiting and the reactions you're getting, and Steve having been on it so many times, you are not alone in feeling or thinking that way.
Mm-hmm. Because you know why? Because I think it incorporates so much of what we love about other pre-shows. Because you could almost tie it to, it's got a little bit of Rise to it. It's got a little bit of Haunted Mansion to it. Like it's got like, you know, all these different like rides that have come together. And I think that this, like the ride in general, is sort of like, it's like a spiritual successor to like Space Mountain, to Twilight Zone, Tower of Terror, to like so many things that have come together and coalesced to make this beautiful baby that it is now. I love it, but I will say, and I have, in my old age, I have become, sorry, Frank, in my old age, I have started to like really struggle with motion sickness. And I was so worried this ride was going to mess me up. I think I was very lucky that I was in the front car because I've heard that that front car is actually the best place you can be if you do struggle with motion sickness. Right. If you're any further back, it's a little worse. So I know.
Justin, I mean, we haven't really talked about this publicly, I don't think, but you know, you rode the Velocicoaster with me.
I have, yeah.
That's right.
Side with Frank.
I thought I was, in my heart of hearts, I think I was hiding it pretty well, but I think you can attest, Justin, that I was not hiding it very well, how I felt most of that day.
There was no hiding it. You were giddy.
Yeah.
You were giddy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I was messed up after it.
And dehydrated. Yeah,
you were messed up. You were messed up, but you were trying to cover that up. But I think it was because you enjoyed it so much that you didn't want, because that ride is incredible.
So can you compare, Justin, because I will never go on the Velocicoaster. Can you do a side by, which ride would you say is like more intense?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question because so I've ridden Velocicoaster 4 times now, and it's been in different parts of the train.
Okay.
I have never, luckily, I should be knocking wood. There's no wood. Where's the wood? I've never gotten motion sick on Velocicoaster. Okay. It has not. Hulk gets me every time.
That's crazy.
Velocicoaster has never gotten me. And I'm not sure exactly why that is. But Cosmic Rewind. So, okay. In terms of triggering like motion sickness, Cosmic Rewind's more intense, but the overall experience is more intense on Velocicoaster,
right?
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not going on. I really felt like I really went in pretty blind to Cosmic Rewind. So when it got intense, when the launch gets you, silly me, like somewhere in my head I was like, whoa, that's crazy. All right, we're gonna slow back down now, and like it's gonna go back to what it was in this beginning portion. No, we're gotta, okay, God, please just get through this. I just was like, I didn't realize. So I, for me, was like, I was not expecting the intensity of that ride.
I know.
And I am one to close my eyes on big rides. So a lot of it was spent with my eyes closed. Yeah, I know, which I missed a lot.
Well, see, but that also could make the motion sickness worse.
But that's what I do when if I'm in a car, I like close my eyes. I'm like, I'm sick. Like, that's just the automatic thing. I tried to open them at certain points because I knew, oh, I'm missing a lot of this. Hold on. And I would try to like force my eyes open and be like, nope, can't do it.
Wow. Okay.
Close them again.
All right.
Like, you know, and what's funny, Jen, to all of that, I would say, I think you could go on the Velocicoaster before Flight of the Gryffindor. In Hogsmeade.
Flight of the Gryffindor.
When you said it, I was like,
attraction. What's the other? What's the main
attraction?
You've
just combined two attractions, is what you did.
Forbidden Journey. There's Escape from Gringotts.
It's Forbidden Journey. Gringotts, I think you can do.
Forbidden Journey is the worst.
Shows you how
Flight of Passage.
Steppers are going to kill me.
Flight of the Gryffindor.
She's coming for you.
While we're at it, let's besmirch E.T.
Yeah, I mean, and quite honestly, for Velocicoaster, and I've made no secret about this, a big part of that is me being a chicken about it. I don't like the idea of a lap band. lap bar.
We're doing well here.
And I'm drinking water. Lap bar. Like, I don't like that there's nothing else that I can hold on to. So, and I don't like upside down things. I just never have. Rock and Roller Coaster is the biggest roller coaster I've done. I mean, like, so I'm a big chicken. But also my head, for me, it's more like when I get nauseous and motion sick, it's all like it's in my head. I feel it all, and like I get dizzy and all the things. So I'm like, that ride would just move my head all around and I would be screwed up. I know it.
It could. Yeah. I mean, I do think like, so Velocicoaster is one of my favorite roller coasters I've ever been on, but I am a huge roller coaster fan and I love like the bigger thrills, the more intense, the better. So I realize that it's not for everybody.
Yeah,
absolutely not for everybody. Do I wish you could experience that? Yes, but I realize that maybe that's not for you. But I do think that like rides like Cosmic Rewind, it makes me a little bit sad because I think there's so many people like our friend Skipper Bob and his wife Alicia, like that it really messed them both up, I think, when they rode it. Some people will be totally fine. Like Lewis, he could probably ride Cosmic Rewind all day, every day.
I thought about him. I was like, he is going to love that and just go on it over and over.
Yeah. He'll be totally fine. But he has like a constitution of steel. I don't even understand. He's like a superhero.
I know.
But then I think that there are going to be more. It's not Forbidden Journey level because I may be remembering this wrong. But when Forbidden Journey opened, didn't they have like such a problem with people getting nauseous? They had to like have extra like garbage cans and things for people to throw up in like afterwards.
That's correct. That I mean, I feel like that's correct. I'm trying to think of how long after that I went on it, but that seems familiar. And so that's what's funny too. When this all comes up with like Cosmic Rewind, I'm like, it's not like this isn't the first attraction this has happened to people.
Right.
Yeah.
This is not a surprise. But yeah, that ride. Whew.
Well, and I remember going into Mission Space in the early days when I would ride it more than once, but never again. But back then, and you would go in like smelling Lysol and smelling cleaning products, and you're like, oh, it didn't go well for somebody. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you go on a ride like that and they have a vomit bag in front of you, that's not a good sign.
No.
Justin, since this is a hashtag always MGM episode, but Epcot is your park, right? Would you say Epcot is your park?
Or would you, if you had to pick one? If I had to pick one.
Don't even try.
Are we going to go down that? Because that's a whole other episode. We're going to have, that's like part two with the
Bellows. I wouldn't have him pick. I wouldn't ask that question.
You can't sit here and tell me you're born in the year 1982 and you're going to tell me that Animal Kingdom is your park? Get out of here.
Listen, I can tell you for 100% sure, as a local, if I'm going just on a random day
and
I'm not like, if I don't want to be concerned about crowds, I know, you know, I want to go like just take in the atmosphere, have some drinks, have some food, maybe see a couple of shows. I'm going Animal Kingdom, and that's not a lie.
That sounds like out of convenience, I guess I'll go to Animal Kingdom. That doesn't sound like this is my favorite park. I can't wait to go. I don't want to deal with crowds, and I guess I'll go here.
I'm saying it is agnostic to crowd level because it doesn't matter. Because I can still do a lot of things because people are, you know, maybe have this bias against Animal Kingdom. They don't necessarily go there, and I can go do the things that I know I like to do. It has the best lounge on property. We are the pass holder lounge. So I mentioned the best lounge on property. It has one of the best shows, maybe two of the, I haven't seen the new Nemo, but the celebration of the Lion King or the, whatever they're calling it now. One of the best shows on property. It has like all of the, it's got maybe arguably one of the best rides, Flight of Passage. And then
Chaddy's going to talk about Satuli Canteen for about an hour and a half. Get ready.
Would you like me to tell you all the things? You want some green beer? You want one of the best quick service restaurants you can find in a theme park? I mean, come
Justin, on. They're I not follow, you, hang on, a I follow you on. I follow you on social media. I don't see the selfies of you in the Animal Kingdom. I see the selfies in the other parks.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, come on. Now, like work proximity, I can
just make
a few steps and go into Epcot now. So
now, if someone was like one park the rest of your life, that's it. You cannot go to any of the other parks. Which one park are you?
Are you saying only Disney?
Yes.
Okay. One park the rest of my life.
And first of all, dare you? Would you even pick something outside of Disney?
Hey, listen, this is a not a Disney podcast. That's tough, but I think I might say if I could only go to one for the rest of my life, I think I'd say Magic Kingdom.
All right. That's fine.
Because I wouldn't want to cut off my access to the Haunted Mansion or Space Mountain or, you know, the People Mover.
Yes.
You know, you get it. You know what I'm saying.
No, I think it was hard to argue against the Magic Kingdom in that.
Yes, I would never. If you would have said Animal Kingdom, I think this show would have been over.
Okay. Well, speaking of being over, I want to get to a logical conclusion here, which is here's where I was kind of headed with a lot of this discussion, which now when you look at hashtag always MGM, Hollywood Studios, as some of us call it, it is aside from the entry experience of Hollywood Boulevard and Sunset Boulevard, it is drastically changed. It's not the same park. Mm-hmm. And that being the case, does it still have that connection to the nostalgia? Does it still hit the same for you all?
We're just like nodding. I think in certain areas, yes. However, now that I'm thinking about it, if I'm in Galaxy's Edge and it's dusk, it's pretty good. That's hitting me in my feels, even though it's not nostalgic necessarily.
Yeah.
But as someone who is only a Star Wars appreciator and not a Star Wars nerd, to stand and look at the Millennium Falcon and be like taking it all in, very cool, very, you know, I do think things they've done where they create Toy Story Land, they're creating Galaxy's Edge, they're calling it Hollywood Studios, which, just as a side note, my kids are very literal. So when I'm down there with them, I like force myself to say Hollywood Studios. And I think I slipped up and said MGM at some point, and they were like, what is that? And I'm like, well, listen, Hollywood Studios used to be called MGM. And they were like, what? And I'm like, yeah, so to me, it's always MGM.
Hashtag.
Yes. But I, you know, even, listen, I like Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. I do. I think it's a really good ride. I enjoy it. It just doesn't belong there. You could have kept the great movie ride. So for me, to call it Hollywood Studios, to bring in Toy Story Land, to bring in Galaxy's Edge, you're keeping some of the idea of Hollywood, but you're also removing yourself from it. So I don't feel like they're as in limbo as they once were. Like before Galaxy's Edge opened and Toy Story Land opened, I felt like that park became like, you guys got to get it together because I don't even know what people are doing here right now. But I do still feel like they still have to find their flow of what they are doing with the park overall, because so many things are a little bit disconnected now. But I don't want to see Muppets go away. I still love Star Tours. I love walking down to the Tower of Terror and seeing that, you know, like I think there is still a hint of Hollywood there. And if you're going to call the park that, then do it. But I would love to see some more. I would love to see the Streamosphere come back. I would love to see some more Hollywood implemented.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know if any of that made sense, but
it makes
total
sense.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
What was the question that Jen answered?
The question was, does hashtag always MGM in today's modern state hit for you the same way it did back when it was you called it your home park? Like, does it still have that effect when you walk in? Does it still like hit all the feels and make you feel that Disney magic?
I think, you know, going back to the earlier conversation about the Sorcerer's Hat and the thing and like that time period where I felt like they tried to disconnect me from my home park. And, you know, even I never saw what it was, that lights action motor, whatever that motor show was. What are you doing over there? No. Tell me when the Christmas lights are back up over there. And so I feel like now with Toy Story Land being done and Galaxy's Edge being done and, you know, my time involved with the family and in those areas, I feel as connected to that park as I did those first 10 years. The middle time, they tried. They tried real hard. But I feel now more connected to that, as connected to that park as I did in the first 10 years of, because I left at the 10-year mark, I guess, when I stopped working there. But that being said, I think I don't feel the full commitment to what they're doing. You know, when you look at, and I get there's still stuff, they're still slow easing back in, but, you know, walking down that barren Pixar place, you know, we used to be Mickey Avenue, like there's nothing happening there. You know, you look at Launch Bay is now coming back, but does this area really still need to be Launch Bay? It doesn't, you know, you just, it's very haphazard in places instead of just committing to what it is. To me, you know, it's the Star Wars box, the Pixar box, the Disney Junior box. I mean, it's basically a Disney Plus park, but please God, don't call it that. we call it MGM. You know, I was trying to think, is it always MGM because that's the family thing. The family just calls it MGM because when I was working there, and I still do it, I call it the studios a lot of the time. And that was definitely a cast member thing for me. Oh, I'm going to go over to the studios. You want to go over to the studios? Mm-hmm. Oh, what are you working today? I'm working over at the studios. So I'm kind of torn in between those two places. So as long as the studios part never goes away, mm-hmm. I'm cool. But you got to focus on the Star Wars portion, which is Lucasfilm's its own thing. And Pixar is its own thing. So work on that stuff so that you can justify the Hollywood Studios name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. I actually read today something that I thought was kind of interesting, and it was just talking about how the deal with MGM was, it was strictly licensing more than it was anything else, so that mm-hmm. they could tie it out to, you know, an actual functioning studio. But a lot of, and there were a lot of situations where when Disney was marketing the park, they couldn't call it MGM and they just called it the studios.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So,
yeah. Which I think, you know, it's so funny because we saw, the 6-year-old and I saw The Wizard of Oz last month in the studios because there's like Fathom Events and, you know, they always tie it into the Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah.
So it always makes me think of the dying days of the Great Movie Ride. Yeah. And just, you know, just watching that is like, okay, whatever they were able to capture during those early days with this connection to MGM. You know, and they tried at the end by trying to loop in Turner Classic Movies. But again, they didn't commit. They didn't go all in with that of really making it what it could be. But now you have it. Now you have this opportunity to, again, kids who are watching movies, who are watching these TV shows, what have you. You have an opportunity to grab them in this park by making it real. And they got to really lean into that, I think, more than they are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the thing. And just like Jen was saying, like, I think maybe this is at the crux of the problem with that park is that they won't commit one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And they're at some point they will have to define what is this park now.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And whether that's, surely they won't just totally abandon the studios. Although back in, if you remember, like 2017, 2018, they considered renaming the park.
Yeah.
But then I think they came out and claimed they weren't going to do that. But no, it was like a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, you do have to pick a direction. And why not just embrace this? It could still be studios, but we are giving you the experience of walking in these lands, right? You got Toy Story Land, Star Wars, you could have Pixar. If at some point they could do something to bring in like a Marvel area,
right?
And then just make it that. Keep indie, keep the Muppets, don't get rid of them.
Correct.
I'm not saying that. But I think that's what they're going to have to do at some point.
No, the pieces are all there. And so, yeah, it's just making that decision that that's the direction you want to go. Before we went on our Animal Kingdom tangent, my question about your Epcot being your home park, Justin, was more in the lines of, you know, Animal Kingdom and Magic Kingdom have a clear, this is what we are, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you're never going to shake that out of Magic Kingdom, but Animal Kingdom does a good job of that. Studios and Epcot seem to have this like, what are we doing? What's happening? What are these worlds that are our lands now?
Agreed.
Did you feel it's okay for Cosmic Rewind to be an Epcot? You don't feel like it's like this isn't about what Epcot's mission was or anything like that. Were you okay? You were accepting that this ride exists?
I will say it's taken me some time to kind of let go of my Epcot purist mentality because, you know, and at this point, there's nothing we can do about it. I mean, Epcot was never supposed to have characters in it. Mm-hmm. Like Figment was the character. Right. It wasn't supposed to have anything else. You know, it was a showcase of culture and technology and communicate like education. It's not that. It's never going to be that again because I know you can't sell that to people anymore. Mm-hmm. Like that's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. This whole rebranding and re-imaging they're doing of Epcot. I honestly, you talk about like COVID impact. I think it's hit Epcot the worst because there's so many things that they're going to have to change, make some cuts, like, or at least reimagine in a more cost effective or different way that they were going to do that. I think it's going to mess up the cohesion of what they were trying to do, especially in Future World.
Right.
Okay. If you're asking me off the record, do I think Cosmic Rewind belongs in Epcot? I would say no, it does not. That would be a Hollywood Studios ride for me. But now in this weird ambiguous world of what is Epcot? Why is Epcot? Then sure. Fine. Whatever. I guess. Cause I've kind of gotten to that point where it's just like, you know, they're trying to like loosely tie it back to, oh, well, Star-Lord visited Epcot in 1982. Right. And you're really going to Vindaria, right? It's like it's some sort of like a technology exhibit for Vindaria. Okay, all right, fine. At least you tried. You know,
right? Yeah, because Jay had mentioned that, like, you know, his only he loved the ride, but he was like, you could argue, does it belong in Epcot? He's like, it doesn't matter. It's there. It's awesome. Who cares?
Yeah.
And then when Frank and I were talking about it, and you said like, well, you know, could you tie it in with the whole space theming? And I'm like, well, I guess if you're tying it in with space, sure, it makes sense. Yeah. But as a whole, if you were just looking at it, no, it doesn't belong there. But yeah, I guess if you're going for a whole space theme over there, sure.
Yeah, that's kind of, and I think that's kind of what they're going with. Mm-hmm. You've got Mission Space, you've got Space 220, and now you've got Cosmic Rewind all in that little cluster. And sure, are we going to make Test Track in space?
I mean, why not? Well, we're going to put the Play Pavilion in. That's really what's going to throw everything off. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to happen there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah,
I think it comes down to leaning into it, and I think they think it connects. But I think they need to do a better job of telling us how it all connects.
Yeah.
And that's a similar thing with studios. They're non-committal. And I was like, that's a problem for me.
Mm-hmm. You know? It is. Cause eventually if you're just going to be vague and ambiguous, all the parks, how do you tell them apart?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what goes where, what characters can you find in which place? I don't necessarily think that characters should be in multiple parks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I should be able to go if you're doing Pixar in Hollywood Studios, then they should probably not be in Magic Kingdom.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I agree. I was annoyed when Buzz went in 1999. I was annoyed when Buzz went to Tomorrowland, but they put Pandora in Animal Kingdom. So I feel like there is a precedent, but they did a really good job of connecting it.
Yeah.
They did a really good job. I watched all the hype. I didn't get there for several years because I don't go to Animal Kingdom. But, you know, I remember watching all the buildup and whatever shows they were plugging it on. And I was like, you know what? Like, they're doing a good job of hooking it into the Animal Kingdom park. Mm-hmm. And I think that's not what we're getting here. And I don't think that's what we got with both Toy Story Land and Galaxy's Edge. And I love both of those lands. And you know, Toy Story Land, I walked back there every day, practically. Mm-hmm. I was on a tram going to a parade. I was going to drop off a costume. I was going on and off set. I was doing Make-A-Wish meet and greets in that area. You know, like I did lots of stuff in that area. And it comes rushing back as soon as I pass that Woody statue. Because a lot of the times back then, I was working with Woody. And that's where I did a lot of that stuff. So it – but – to me, it's like it's more like a what do I want to say? It honors the work that I did, you know, because like I was like, it's so cool that I started the month that Toy Story came out in 1995. That was my first weekend working at the studios. So to see this in this area, knowing how I traversed this backstage area, is cool to me. And obviously, I'm never going to argue against Galaxy's Edge.
Right.
And
no.
Where it is now. As much as I missed the Christmas lights, like, no, you can't. Yeah. You can't argue against that.
Yeah. Me too. I wish that was something that they could bring back in some capacity. Yes. Who knows? Maybe we'll get Life Day in Galaxy's Edge someday and they'll put.
I think you're getting it someday, 100%. Yeah. I think people are going to want to book Galactic Star Cruiser trips to have Life Day celebrations.
Yeah.
No, they gotta.
Is it Kashyyyk or Kazook, in your opinion?
Oh gosh, I said Kashyyyk forever. So I don't know. When I hear it that way, it does make me go, what?
But it's been said both ways, I think, and canonically both ways. But you know, it's like Han and Han, Leia and Leia.
Oh God. So mad at Lando Calrissian to this day, what he did to everybody else in that cast.
Well, I appreciate you guys coming on and helping me to launch this show, having with a nice old school hashtag always MGM conversation. And I think that obviously it was foolish of me to say this was going to be a short conversation. I should know better.
What? It's an hour. That's good.
I thought we did good.
Us.
I was like, oh, he's wrapping up. It's great.
We did fantastic.
He stuck the landing.
Well, you know, historically, yes, this would be a short podcast especially in terms of our collaborations.
But, yes.
But no, thank you all so much for doing this. And
of course,
and I want people, especially if you are new to any of us, you've got to know where you can find more Dillo's Diz goodness. So let's tell the people where they can find your content.
Well, first of all, let me say that we're so excited to hear your voice again on podcasts. It's as much as it's been a very fast, you know, year or so, you know, hearing your voice in this format again is so exciting. Mm-hmm. And we're so excited that you're back in the fold and looking forward to all the podcasts coming out going forward. Just that you're in this realm, it gets me excited. So I can't find the words. I'm so excited. So Jen and I do a podcast called Theme Park Thursday with Dillo's Diz. We drop it every Thursday on all your podcatchers. We are at Dillo's Diz on the Twitter, on the Instagram, on the TikTok. We just crossed over 10,000 followers on the TikTok. So, you know, it was every little step. you can subscribe to us on YouTube. We drop a lot of videos there along the way. We always want to give our YouTube more love, and we don't. And that is our main thing. We got DillosDizResort.com. That is our Patreon. So we have a fun little following there at $1 per month. You get to join our wacky little chat, but we do a lot of extra live recordings over there before dropping them elsewhere. So DillosDizResort.com for our Patreon, DillosDiz.com for all the other things along the way.
Fantastic. Like a professional.
Yes.
This is the last call for alcohol this evening.
Holy cow. Jen and Frank, they did it. They did it. They really helped me to get this thing rolling when I first decided to record a podcast again. First episode, getting back out there, and they helped me knock the rust off better than anybody could. I feel so comfortable recording with Jen and Frank because we jive well, we have a good rapport. I always feel like I talk too much, but you know what? I guess in this case it's my show, so maybe that's okay. But thank you so much, Jen and Frank. What a wonderful episode this was. I hope people really enjoyed it. And, you know, they'll be back. They will be back in the Passholder Lounge. So look forward to that in the future. Until then, we've got a lot more coming at you in the coming weeks. And I hope you're enjoying the journey so far. Many, many more co-hosts will be joining the show. Many more voices and perspectives and I can't wait to get to all of that. In the meantime, you can keep in touch with me. I'm at the PHL Pod on Twitter. That's at the PHL Pod on Twitter. You can tweet at me. Follow me. Interact with me all the time throughout the week. If you want to email me, you can do that. PassholderLoungePod@gmail.com. Send me your thoughts. Send me your comments. If you have any questions you want me to answer, particularly about lounges, that would be great. Send them my way, and that's something that we can get to. Thank you all so much, though, for listening. The initial launch here is going really, really well. I'm having a good time recording it, and I hope that's coming across and translating to you enjoying as you listen. But you know what? If you're not, crack open another drink and hit the highway, baby. There are plenty of podcasts for you to listen to. This is a place of positivity and acceptance and good times. And let's keep them rolling. I love you all. Take care of yourselves. I'm raising my glass to you. Cheers, friends. I will see you in the lounge. Bye-bye.
Drink up, drink up, drink up, then order again. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.